and good evening, and welcome to Bird Calls from the Knoll Foundation Studios here at Red River Radio. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. We invite you to call in with your questions tonight about our feathered friends in the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he's ready to answer your calls about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he's held since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the first author of the book, Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M Press, and he has authored over 70 publications on birds and birding. He and his wife, Julie, and their two children live in East Texas. And Cliff, thanks again for joining us tonight.
Well, good chilly and drizzly evening to you.
Yeah, this seems to be a colder than normal and a wetter than normal weather-wise for this winter, and wondering how that affects the birds, but we'll get to that shortly. Mm-hmm. At the end of last month's program, you gave us a conservation tip, and we'd like to refresh our memories about that, if you could.
Sure.
To fill our audience in.
Yep, we ended last episode with a discussion about feathers and other bird parts and how they're fully protected, and that it's very tempting to pick up feathers and keep them, or pick up a, you know, roadkill hawk or owl and maybe take it to your local taxidermist. But without a permit, you can't have any of the above. And so don't kill the messenger here. But we do have game wardens that find online people that have shot things that they shouldn't have. They get calls from taxidermists that were someone dropped off a hawk or owl that they shouldn't have, or they peruse farmers markets and trade shows where people are selling bouquets of flowers and things, and inside those are blue jay feathers or cardinal feathers, and it's just impossible to prove that you didn't that you just picked those up from the ground. So the rule is just don't do it. Don't pick up feathers. I know that it's important for kids maybe to pick up things. I'm all for that. I guarantee you game wardens aren't walking around knocking on doors saying, I'm here to look through your house. But I think, you know, it gets extreme when you're trying to have a mount of something in your house that you shouldn't have. So game species are, of course, qualified. So if you have a hunting license and you collect that duck or Bob White or wild turkey, you can of course have that mounted, but you can't, the average Joe can't have a mounted great horned owl in their house. You just can't do that. Educational facilities, nature centers, they can get a permit very easily that allow them to display that to the public. But however tempting it might be, just give that dead bird a proper burial and be done with it.
And as the primary purpose for that is to discourage poaching and other things. So any, you know, that way there's no dispute about whether or
That's
not
right.
I found it on the ground or I actually shot a bird that I shouldn't have.
That's right.
No argument. If you've got it, then that's it. The law, it says what it says.
That's
and
right.
You can't do that.
That's right. It's pretty straightforward. And so, again, don't shoot the messenger on this one. But it's an important one to remember. And even if you're trying to sell these bouquets, that's fine. Just don't put feathers in it. Maybe go to a friend that's raising chickens. And there's some beautiful feathers that the chicken folks will have, the farmers will have, that you can use instead of a native bird. So the key is a native bird. So if you find feathers of a pigeon or a parrot in your cage, that's not the same thing. We're talking about native species of birds. Native to the U.S., yeah.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have a couple of calls online. Please hold on right now. We want to get to our profile species for this month.
So our nation's bird, the bald eagle, but before it was selected as such, Ben Franklin argued that due to its fondness for carrion and for stealing fish from ospreys, it was not fit to represent the United States. Let's hear what a bald eagle sounds like here.
Hmm. doesn't sound nearly as manly as one would expect.
No, it's not a loud, deep voice you might expect from such a large bird. So back to Ben Franklin's argument against the bald eagle. Guess which species of bird he voted for? Well, due to its boldness and feisty behavior, he wanted the wild turkey to be our national bird. And that didn't work out for him, did it? Here's the wild turkey.
Had to get that in.
That's great. That's great. So you can see two fantastic photos of bald eagles snapped by James Childress of Lufkin on the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org. One of those photos shows two adults, one with a fresh-caught tilapia, snapped from a friend's pond last month that's located just a few blocks outside of the loop of Nacogdoches. The other photo shows an adult on the nest with about a month-old chick that was snapped recently at Ellen Trout Lake, which is right next door to Lufkin's Ellen Trout Zoo. The sexes are alike, as in most raptors, the females are slightly larger than the males. The adult weighs about 9.5 pounds. That's less than a large bag of sugar from your grocery store. The bald eagle takes roughly 5.5 years to acquire the all-white head and tail. Before that, they're all brown and might be incorrectly identified as a golden eagle. The bald eagle's wingspan from tip to tip is about 80 inches or roughly 6.5 feet. This species is found in the Red River Radio listening area year-round, but the numbers get very inflated during the colder months as birds that bred to our north, where water freezes solid in winter, come south here to overwinter with us. In the 1970s, due to the impacts of the pesticide known as DDT, there were only about 7 known nests of bald eagles across my state of Texas. Nowadays, the estimate for Texas is over 250 breeding pairs. The bird has certainly made a comeback since the ban of DDT. Going to any large lake or reservoir in our listening area during the colder months will usually involve a sighting of this eagle. Active anglers, because they're out on the water so much, they see plenty of eagles. Twice in the last 8 years, my wife and I have seen an adult bald eagle flying high over our Nacogdoches home. A sighting by an excited observer is one of the most common emails or phone calls about birds that we receive at the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, but because the species is so common nowadays, we don't flinch unless someone tells us the location of a new active nest. If you want to see a bald eagle, you don't have to venture far. Talk to your neighborhood bass fisherman, for instance, as that person can tell you where and when to see an eagle in your area.
And as I had mentioned before, where I grew up in Ohio, they had all but gone. The falcons, the eagles, mm-hmm. and the hawks, and they are all back, as well as the Canada geese, and they mm-hmm. are all back now, which is good news
yep.
for the environment.
It
and,
is.
Certainly beautiful to see when you're out on the river in the wintertime and you see a whole flock of Canada geese just sitting there,
yep.
just enjoying the cold weather, sitting on the ice floes. So you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We do have a couple of calls online. We don't want to leave them holding on. And then we'll get to a couple of questions and things that Cliff has here for us in a short while. But first, Dave from South Shreveport, you're online with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Cliff, I'm about 5 miles from the studio at LSUS. Until recently, we've had barred owls whose call I'm pretty good at determining.
Okay.
I haven't seen any barred owls this year. There is a new player in town, and I can't identify it. It's a hawk. It has a fairly small head, a fairly broad and short wing. Its call is peculiar to me. It sounds, at first, almost like the staccato bark of a squirrel.
Mm-hmm.
And if it just does that singly, it sounds sort of like a squirrel, but then it'll do a bunch of them together, and it sounds more like a chicken.
Hmm.
And it's always high. I've been able to find them with my binoculars. Any ideas?
Well, in close association with the barred owl is the red-shouldered hawk. And let's see if Bill can find that. He's a wizard over here trying to find that one. Listen to this one.
Go, Bill, but no, that's not it. it.
Okay. Well, that would be my guess, because both the barred owl and the red-shouldered hawk occur in similar habitat. Now, my barred owls in my backyard, they have recently started really hooting and hollering, because this is the time of courtship. So I would think, unless there's been some drastic change in the habitat where you're talking about, I would think your barred owls are still there. They're just maybe a little quiet. But I don't know why the hawk would have anything to do with this. You think the hawk maybe drove him out? Is that what you're suggesting?
I don't know. I'm just making the observation.
Yeah, I don't think that, that they have different times of the day that they're active, and you'll see that nature that the diurnal counterpart is going to be feeding on the same stuff, similar stuff, but during the daytime. And here comes the barred owl at night doing kind of the night shift. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's going to be much of an interaction between your hawk and your owl. So I would bet if you just wait a little bit, you'll probably hear your barred owls, like my backyard one, starting to really hoot and holler as they start to court before breeding.
Okay.
Thanks
very much.
Great. Thanks for the call, Dave.
You bet.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any call or question regarding our avian world is welcome. And Cliff, we've got the Great Backyard Bird Count coming up. Can you tell us what that is and go into some detail?
Right. I'm really excited about it. It's a national effort that's spearheaded by the National Audubon Society and Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And it's encouraged by local communities to put on an event. If we're going to do an Nacogdoches, or the individual in your backyard can count birds and that are coming to your feeder. You don't have to make this a big event, but they require that you count for at least 15 minutes the birds that are coming to and from your bird feeder. And so you can go to eBird and enter those data, but first Google Great Backyard Bird Count to find out more about it. But in Nacogdoches, we're going to have a blown out event, which we're really excited about, at the Piney Woods Native Plant Center in Nacogdoches at 2900 Regay from 9 a.m. to noon this Saturday, rain or shine. We're going to profile a lot of birds. We're going to have a lot of activities for birds. We're going to have hikes, weather permitting. If it does rain, we still have a lot of stuff for all ages that people can do. If we get stuck indoors, there'll be crafts for kids, games for kids. There'll be some specimens from the local university, Stephen F. Austin State University, and the ornithologist there, Brent Burt, is going to be there to explain some of the specimens from the collection. So I encourage you all to, in the Lufkin Knack area, or even if you're from farther out, come visit us in Knack to the Piney Woods Native Plant Center and see what we have in store.
If you're a bird lover, it's a great chance to have some fun and meet other bird lovers.
That's right.
Maybe get some tips on your bird watching skills as
yep.
well. Give us a call at 800-552-8502 right now if you'd like to ask Cliff any question about our avian world. This is Bird Calls, and we do have phone lines open right now. We're going to go to our next caller, Glenn from Lufkin. Glenn, you're online with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Yes, sir. Hey, Cliff, this is Glenn. We've probably met a few times. I used to work with the U.S. Forest Service.
Okay.
The Angelina National Forest.
Yep. Hey, Glenn, how are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Last spring, late spring, I built a Purple Martin house, quite a condo I built. Got online and looked up all the details, built larger nesting boxes as opposed to the little small ones. But anyway, I was late getting it up last year, didn't get any martins. This year, I'm wondering what I can do to try to get some. I've got some of the decoy birds out. I haven't done anything with the, I know you can get some CDs for martin calls mm-hmm. kind of thing. But I'm just wondering, I've been watching them online. There's some reported early arrivals all in South Texas. But and I don't have any purple martins around me that I'm aware of. So I guess I just have to wait for them to find my location.
Right. I think you've mentioned the key things. You got the house up, you've got the decoys up, and then if you play those recordings that are recommended, that helps. And then the last thing you didn't mention is crossing your fingers.
Ah, yeah. Well, that's what I figured.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. I've mentioned this many times. It's like hunting or fishing. Just because you go out and cast that line doesn't mean you're going to catch a fish. And same thing with putting up a birdhouse. It's a lot like that. Just because you put it up doesn't mean someone's going to take to it. So you've done all you can, and the rest is crossing your fingers and hope for the best.
Okay.
So, well. And then the conditions are really critical, Glenn. We didn't mention, and I'm assuming you have got a really open area for it, like a half acre or more field.
Yeah, more of my lot is an acre and a half, and there are some trees, but I put it in the most open place I could, and I've got it up about 20 feet.
Good, good, because some people put them in the woods or under a canopy tree, and that just doesn't work. It's got to be full sun all day long, open, and that's what these guys like. So it sounds like you've got everything else, and just cross your fingers. You got two hands, so there's more fingers you can cross that way.
Okay. Well, I'll see if I can get the toes involved too.
There you go.
Good. Good. If you get any luck this year, call us back in a couple months and let us know how it went.
Okay. Thank you very
much. Okay. Thank you, Glenn.
Bye.
Bye.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and all lines are open right now. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds in our avian world are welcome. And as I said, all lines are open right now, so you'll get right in. Cliff, we had a loss here since the last show here at LSUS. Can you fill us in on who we lost in the avian world and tell us about his life and a little bit?
We lost a champion with ornithology here at LSUS. His name was Dr. Jim Ingold, and he passed away recently. He was the ornithologist at LSUS campus, taught ornithology. He was a master bird bander and just a super nice guy. I met him 2 decades ago, and he was the ornithologist here. So I'm imagining he worked here for 25 plus years. So I don't know that for sure, but he's been here for over 2 decades. And so we're sad to lose an ornithologist in the local community here in Shreveport.
And he was still on the job, was he not, at the time?
He was still teaching up to the end of the fall semester, and then all this kind of crumbled for him over the Christmas holidays. Yeah. He didn't make it back for the spring semester, unfortunately. So that's a bummer for students that were looking forward to taking his classes. So anyway, Dr. Jim Ingold, rest in peace.
It's sad when any good researcher
and
somebody who really loves their work passes away, because they offer so much to the community of their particular discipline.
That's right.
And so it's sad to lose them. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. And between last show and this show, we did have a submission from Patty Eden from Willis, Texas. And she wanted you to identify this bird. She had she was familiar with this bird, but had never heard the song before. So we're going to play this song for you, and you can talk to us about it. It's a pretty song.
Very loud. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably amplified like my backyard bird under a porch or patio. Right. And she did mention, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but she mentioned she never sees it.
Yeah.
And so every time she goes out, it stops or flies off, and she never catches a glimpse. And that, all of that fits the description and the voice, of course, for the Carolina wren. And it's got a pretty good repertoire. This is just one of many different songs and calls that it does. This is more of a call note here. But the Carolina wren is close to our homes. A lot of people call them house wrens because they're a wren. They're next to the house. Well, that doesn't work that way. This is the Carolina wren. And if you do see one, they're kind of rusty on top and with a big white eyebrow and kind of buffy sides. And wrens typically hide. And if you do see one, they typically have their tail cocked over their back, and they're jittery, feisty, and always moving around, and very vocal with a very loud voice. And so, again, this is the Carolina wren that she sent in. It's nice. We really
it's
encourage
a very good recording.
It is, and we encourage this. And if you don't have recording equipment, which most of us don't have, you do on your cell phone. Mm-hmm. You just don't know it. And we've mentioned that you can use the video function on your cell phone. Don't worry about what it's showing. You're just using the microphone part to record the sound, and then you can turn that into an MP3 file and send that to us. And Bill, you might want to mention the email address to submit that.
The email to send that is wbeckett@lsus.edu, and you'll always find that on our post for bird calls. So it's all over the website. Yeah. Just go to the website and look for bird calls, and you'll definitely find it. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Don't wait till the end of the show rush, because sometimes we don't get them all in at the end of the show. We've got two calls online right now. Thomas, please stay on hold for a second. We're going to go first to Clyde from Nacogdoches. Clyde, what's your question tonight?
Well, I'm hoping to get an identity of a bird that is apparently migrating through. Been seeing flocks of robins, of course, just recently, but there's another one that hit the neighborhood. Also a large flock, very much about robin-sized, I guess, though shaped a little, I don't know, chunkier maybe I could say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's seemed to be all very dark. I'd call it black, but not a real shiny black like a crow. And it didn't have anything like a different eye color. The eye was just a little shiny black bead.
Mm-hmm.
And the beaks were dark. And I'm just wondering what they were.
Yep, there are a couple choices, and I've been noticing what you've noticed that lately, and there are a few different species of blackbirds that are coming through in big numbers. Red-winged blackbirds come through. The females are usually in same-sex flocks. They usually have some markings on them, though, and that didn't fit your description, but I wanted to mention that one. Common grackle didn't quite fit your description either, because they're pretty shiny and they're in big groups and they're going to be seen now in big numbers as they go through. But maybe what your bird is another bird that I'm going to mention here in a second that I've been seeing in my backyard starting Friday of last week, and since then. Either my wife or myself, mostly my wife, has refound them, and those are rusty blackbirds. And so that's a really fantastic bird, and I'm glad you brought it up, because I did want to mention that people need to be on the lookout for rusty blackbirds, and I'm suspecting that's what you've seen. So I had about 120, which was exciting for me, because I don't see more than onesies and twosies anymore. So to have 120 was great, and about a quarter of the flock was in breeding plumage, which is kind of a bright black, shiny black, but the rest of them were still in winter plumage, which was kind of a flat gray. But the rusty blackbird gets its name for fresh winter plumage. The tips of the feathers are brown tinged, and it gives them a rusty look. But as winter goes and proceeds, that those rusty tips wear off and the bird gets just to be a kind of a one color shading. But I've noticed that in the shadows they can look dark, up in the trees with a gray sky background that you don't see a whole lot of color. So Clyde, I'm hoping your birds were rusty blackbirds, because that's what I've been seeing lately, and they're exciting, because if you look at the national trend of that species continentally, it's experienced a 89% decline in the last 45 years. And I know that by heart, because there's not any other bird like that that's experienced that kind of decline. So it's a treat to see it. I think at the rate it's going, it's as if you're seeing some of the last passenger pigeons, last Carolina parakeets. So try to get a picture, Clyde, because it's, you know, in 10 more years, that might be really hard to see.
Well, the problem with that, I mean, I'll try and carry the camera with me and be ready to grab one, but the rascals, I've only seen that flock of them, I think, once.
Yeah, and they're usually pretty skittish. I've tried myself to take pictures, and it's not easy, so I'm not telling you something that's easy to do, for sure, but at least you had a sighting, and when we hang up, look in the book and other listeners can look for red-winged blackbird, common grackle, and rusty blackbird, because all three of those are pouring through. Sometimes they're mixed in with robin flocks. Sometimes these are all mixed together. There might even be brown-headed cowbirds in some of these groups too. So the list keeps growing, but I would say those are the top four to consider.
Well, I know a red-winged blackbird when I see it.
Yeah.
And I know a grackle when I see it, both the common and the great tail.
Right. Well, if this one shocked you as something different, then I would lean towards rusty blackbird, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was it was about the same time you've been seeing them.
Yep.
When I saw it, but I've only seen it once. It was on. The flock. Bombed up off somebody's yard on Virginia as I was heading down it on the way to get my morning coffee. And it was kind of, the light was pretty flat that morning, not real bright. So, but it was, the impression I had was a black bird,
yep.
Or at least a very dark gray, but not shiny.
Right.
And about robin size.
Yep. I think that's what you had, Clyde. So great sighting, sir. Thank you.
And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now for your calls. Now, you said a lot of these birds are pouring through right now, so we're still in sort of a migratory season for these birds. How is the weather affecting the migration this year, given the fairly extreme cold and wet weather that we've been having here?
I think that, cold, drizzly weather, birds have to be a little bit more active for caloric intake for them to stay happy and healthy and warm. So you'll see a lot of birds out there. And I'm glad Clyde brought up the rusty blackbird, because I did want to mention for callers or listeners, I'm sorry, to be on the lookout for that one in this listening area. And another neat sighting I had on February 7th were cedar waxwings in the thousands, plural, downtown Nacogdoches. On last Wednesday, I was downtown with a friend, and we noticed that the holly trees downtown were just covered in cedar waxwings. And I'm looking, I'm going, okay, that's 1,000 birds I'm seeing. And then I look beyond, there's layers of these birds just swarming around. And then I look in the trees all around. And finally, my estimate was 4,000 cedar waxwings.
Oh.
I've only once seen cedar waxwings in those kinds of numbers, and it was impressive. So they would descend on these holly trees outside on downtown, and what was most impressive to me are the people that would just walk by, and these birds were often at eye level or maybe 2 feet above your head, hundreds of them, hundreds and hundreds, just stripping the holly berries off of these trees. And you could hear the wing beats, and these people walk by and never look up. And I was just impressed. And I don't, these aren't people with earbuds on or looking at their cell phone like so many youngsters do. This was just anybody and everybody. And a few times I'd have my cell phone pointing up to take pictures or video, and people would come over and say, "What are you doing? What are you looking at?" And I'm like, "Don't you see that? There's thousands of birds right here stripping these trees of their berries." So be on the lookout for cedar waxwings. They're gorgeous birds. They're very smooth. They have a crest. They have a yellow tip to their tail, and they love berries. So if you've got hollies or a variety of fruits that are out right now, they're coming your way.
It reminds me of a story, and I'm drawing a blank on the violinist, but he's a currently famous violinist, a young man who went down into a subway just dressed in regular garb, started playing the violin, and everybody walked right by him. And he's a world-class famous violinist with, Grammy Awards and the like, and they just, were so busy with their business that they forgot to stop it.
That's funny.
Hear the music.
Yep.
So you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. We have lots of lines open, and your calls will get in. We're going to go to our next call right now. Thomas from Longview, what's your question tonight?
Oh, hi, guys. Hey, appreciate the show. Love the show.
Great.
And but anyway, now I've been listening to it while on hold. I've got a couple of tangents on. to, and that is, first of all, I'm from Houston and was born and raised in Houston. I'm 60-some-odd years old, and but I've been in East Texas for about 25 years. Well, when I was a kid in Houston, talk about the wax wings.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, they didn't migrate through there, you know, in the wintertime. And hundreds, you know, that I saw, which were really cool to me. I never seen a bird like that, you know, or anything. But they would, you know, kind of flock around, and really neat birds. They were not native, you know, or say they had to be passing through, but they were really a neat bird to witness.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing, your former caller was talking about these flocks of blackbirds and stuff, and so. I lived on the Sabine River bottom for a lot of years, you know, when I was here, and or am here. And anyway, in 05, maybe 2005, or 4 or 5, somewhere in there, I used to get these flocks of these blackbirds. I mean, swarms. I mean, mm-hmm. Thousands, you know. And you could see them in the morning and the evening, migrating to wherever they're going.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, where they, I mean, just thousands of them.
Right.
But sometimes they would light in my yard, you know, not in the trees, but in the yard, and peck around looking for whatever they're looking for. And, I mean, even up to the windows and the front porch and everything else. But they were black, not red wings.
Right.
But they can have a brownish tint in their head
mm-hmm.
area.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they were, but they were lovely to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once one flies, the rest of them follow or
right.
something. It was really neat to see.
Right.
And then I'm going to skip around for a little bit. But the red-winged blackbird you're talking about, mm-hmm. when I was in Houston, when I was a kid, this is in the 60s, we'd get flocks of those, you know, that would just, you know, come and go or whatever. And but yeah, the red-winged blackbird, those were the most beautiful blackbirds I ever saw in my life.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little smaller,
mm-hmm.
but really neat. Well, the reason I'm calling is that I was going to ask you a question about quail.
Okay.
I was, you know, in Houston. I was raised, you know, just north of Houston, around the just north of the San Jacinto River.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of woods around, and you know, like grass and stuff. But anyway, there were some bobwhite quail there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved in East Texas in Longview probably about 25 years ago. And I've heard, talking to the old timers, you know, that there used to be quail around here. Well, I've never heard the first bobwhite quail, but here.
Right.
And so, you know, what happened to them? And the old-timers would tell me, well, ants got to, you know, the babies or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so I was just, that's my question. What happened? Were they here, and what happened to them?
Yeah, that's a great question, Thomas. Thanks. There were definitely quail in East Texas and in western Louisiana and even beyond, you know, east and west of that this listening area. But we have really changed the land, and what we've done has not benefited bobwhite. We've taken away native grasses. We've removed, we've removed frequent fire in the woods. We've taken out the savanna or the openness of a lot of these forests that were more open, sparsely timbered with a lot of grass in between, because that grass needs light, needs sunlight, and you can't grow that in these tight monocultures that we're growing nowadays. They're more like rows of corn. So we've done a lot to disfavor the bobwhite quail, and that's a shame. So the old timers do get to tell us what used to be here. You know, they like to blame it all on fire ants. That's one of about 10 nails in the coffin, I'd like to say, about the demise in the quail. But the biggest nail of all is the change in habitat and the loss of native grasses maintained in a grassland or a pine savanna setting. We just don't have that anymore. And quail need big chunks of real estate. We've talked about this on several episodes. It's certainly a question people like to ask, and I'm happy to reiterate and evaluate and rediscuss, but I think if people start watching and looking around, especially the old timers, they will tell you there's not the burning anymore, and they'll tell you that the forests look different, and there's less of them, and there's more coastal Bermuda pasture. So if you drive around this area and see lots of green fields, right now they're not so green. That's non-native grass that's a monoculture, and bobwhite just don't like it. They don't sit on top of it. They can't hide in it like in native grass, and there's just a lack of food in those coastal Bermuda pastures. So all those nails lead to the coffin and the demise of bobwhite, and it's quite unfortunate.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we have all lines open right now. You can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding our avian world is welcome. Again, the number is 800-552-8502. Now, you had mentioned that the migratory season really starts sort of in late October, somewhere around there, but we're still in that for some birds. Can you give us an idea of what is passing through our area right now?
We're still in winter mode right now. Spring migration will begin before the next episode. Let's see, our next episode is March 13th. By then, we could have our first neotropical migrants showing up. Certainly purple martins that one of our first callers talked about, those are very early. Those start showing up in late January, early February. But in early March, we could have our first Louisiana water thrush, black and white warbler, northern parula. These guys come early and start singing, and they weren't with us for the winter. They've been in the tropics, so they're starting to return. And that these are just a handful of the first arrivals in March. And then as you get into April and May, you get a lot more species and individuals coming through. And we call that spring migration. So it's coming up.
Now, are these birds that are coming back to Texas their home and they left because of the cold here? Or are they going to go on through to northern climes?
Both. You have a mix of the two. And you can't look at that black and white warbler and know, is he staying here or is he going to go farther north and breed maybe in Missouri? You don't really know that unless you find a bird on territory and it's there every day singing, and weeks go by and he's clearly set up shop. But if you just have a visual of a black and white warbler, it's not singing, there's a good chance it's a pure migrant. It's just passing through. It's refueling on its long journey, and it stops off, and you just happen to see it, which is, you know, every bird watcher's dream to see these migrants as they pass through for a couple reasons. They're usually very attractive birds that we like seeing, and also they're birds we haven't seen for months and months. So they're returning through our area. It's like seeing an old friend. You're like, hey, buddy, I haven't seen you in months. So it's a lot of fun as a bird watcher to see these migrants pouring through our area. So still in winter mode. You'll start seeing, if you're on the coast, you know, this is about when snow geese start to depart. They start leaving in mid to late February. The ducks are all pairing up. That's an interesting thing about waterfowl, namely ducks. They usually come south here in the winter as singles, and it's like the south is a singles bar, and they mix and mingle and find themselves a date, and then they stay paired up and leave as a mated pair, but they came down here single and they leave as a mated pair, which is pretty cool. And a lot of the waterfowl right now are in superb breeding plumage. Not all of them. You'll see some northern shovelers that are still in drab plumage and winter plumage that are just a little late. But when you do see some of these waterfowl breeding plumage, they are fantastic. So there are things, even though I said this is winter, there are things that are on the move. And first thing that comes to mind are a lot of our waterfowl that are on the way back already.
And down here, because we have a mild winter, there's always bird activity going on around here.
There is. There's not a time that you can't find birds. You know, even in our most miserable times of the year, in the dead of summer when it's so hot, you just realize that, you know, it's us going inside because we're too hot and sweaty, but there are birds out there, and you know, the nature lover goes out first thing in the morning, mm-hmm. and you get it done by 9:30 or 10 a.m., and you've seen your fill, and it's getting pretty steamy, but you've seen a lot of good birds. And that's the beauty of living in the South. There's not a bad time of the year to go out and look at birds.
Great time to get a steam bath as long as you can keep the mosquitoes off of
yeah,
you. So.
Yeah.
So the South is a singles bar for birds. I was wondering why I came down here. So
yep.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. No, we're not doing singles help, but we are talking about birds tonight. So any question regarding our avian world is welcome. And we do have Titus from Lufkin online right now. Titus, what's your question tonight?
Hey, good evening, fellas. Thank y'all for having me.
Hey, Titus.
I was going to ask about, there's been a screeching sound in the back, over 20 acres of my property or so.
Yeah.
And it sounds like death. I mean, it sounds like some kind of a big cat or something. That's the urban legend.
Right.
My father-in-law has been telling me, you know, there's a panther that stalks the woods, and I was going to try and get some professional information on that.
Well, that you probably nailed it, that it's a mammal. Although there is a scream of a barred owl that I don't think we have a recording of, because it's not often used or heard. But there is a screaming of red fox we've profiled in the past, and Bill's looking it up here, and let's see if this is who you've heard.
Oh, that's really close.
Yeah. So that's a red fox.
Might be his sister, you know, higher pitch.
Yeah. And so young red foxes make a pretty loud noise, too, when they're begging, but... yeah, if you're going to have a big cat, you're probably going to see a glimpse of it or a footprint. And if you're really curious, putting up a game camera is the best thing you can do. They're readily accessible, they're inexpensive, and it will open your eyes to what is out there in your backyard when you're not looking, or out on your property when you're not looking. There are now game cameras that will text or email you pictures. So you don't have to go retrieve the disc out of it, the memory stick out of it. It will send you pictures when something's tripped it. So I'd encourage you to do that, Titus, is get a game camera and see if you see a big cat. My guess is you're not.
Well, and the reason I was kind of giving y'all a call, I thought it might be an owl or some kind of bigger bird.
Now the barred owl scream, I can't imitate it, but it sounds like if you try to steal the purse off an old... Oh, you do have it. There it is. Let's try it again.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot longer drawn out than...
And there's the hoots that go with it. So my description, I'm glad Bill found it. I forgot that we had it here. My description was, if you tried to steal... A lady's purse on the road, and she screamed, on the sidewalk, if you tried to mug her, that's the scream you would get. And you'll hear that late at night. And I've talked to plenty of people that, you know, if they said, if I was camping, I would be packing up and getting out of here, because I have no idea who was screaming out there. And that's the interesting thing about nature. If you finally figure out what a lot of these calls are, there's no reason to be scared. Right. There's no Bigfoot that's going to get you. There's no big giant owl that's going to swoop down and pick you up just because you hear a scream. And there's just all kinds of neat sounds. And so I'm glad Bill found the red fox and the barred owl scream. So
that's why you hired me for this job.
Yeah, that's right. He's earning his keep over here.
Hey, your description makes me think of an old Seinfeld episode or something like that.
Oh yeah. What did he steal from her? It was a loaf of bread, wasn't it?
A marble rye.
The marble rye. That's right. Very good. Yeah, very good, Titus. That's a good way to end the call with a Seinfeld
there you go.
Episode. Thank you, Titus.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, I was living out in the wilds of Florida for a while, and I heard what sounded like children screaming at night. And it turned out, I think it was a coyote, because that area of the Florida is infested with packs of coyotes.
Uh-huh.
One of them actually attacked my dog one night.
And,
yeah, well, I got out there in time to save the dog, thankfully. It was a small chow, so about 40 pounds, and the coyote had to be at least 70. So.
Uh-huh.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We've got Cynthia and Thomas online right now. Please hold on. Larry from Nacogdoches, you're next. What's your question tonight?
Hey, Cliff.
Hey.
A couple weeks ago, we had three white pelicans out on a little private lake in Nacogdoches County.
Okay.
Never had seen them before and was just curious if that was unusual or not.
Okay, so pelicans, white pelicans, do migrate through or over East Texas in migration, and they will winter here as well in small numbers. And, of course, they're fish eating, so they're constantly looking for new bodies of water to go fishing. And
right.
So how long did your bird stay?
A few days, actually. My wife saw them. But they only stayed maybe 2 or 3 days at the most, I believe.
Okay, well, that's cool. I would say you're probably watching that pond a lot. It's unusual for that body of water. But so let me add a perspective that I have of the regional perspective. It's expected. There are white pelicans going back and forth during migration, some in winter, as I said. Now, we don't have them as a breeding bird, most of our birds are probably breeders from the Dakotas, maybe even Montana, maybe parts of southern Canada, and they fly a long way to get here. And one time on Rayburn in fall migration, I had 1,000 pelicans from the 147 bridge.
Right.
Of Sam Rayburn. So you can see big numbers like that or the smaller numbers like you've got. And, you know, they're what's neat about pelicans is they're probably our heaviest bird that we have in this listening area with the largest wingspan. So a whooping crane's pretty doggone big, too, but we don't have a lot of those in our area, but we have a lot of white pelicans. So I think that's the neat thing to watch is watch how tough it is for a pelican to get up and get out of there because they are a heavy bird that needs a lot of effort to get lift. So cool, Larry. We'll keep an eye out and see what else you find on your pond. Pelicans are a good one to have.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502, but you better hurry. The show's about to end here shortly. We've got two callers online. Cynthia's up next. Thomas, please stay online with us. Cynthia, what's your question tonight?
Hello. I love birds. I used to work at the Ottoman Zoo as a volunteer in New Orleans, and recently got to go in Belize got to see a Montezuma orangipendula. Am I saying it right?
Or a pendula.
That's it?
Yep. It's Nycteris. It's a blackbird relative.
And its call is so awesome. I wish people could hear that. But I'm not very good at attracting birds. We do have a lot of neat birds at our home. We've actually had bald eagles in our pond, and we have Canada geese and ringnets and all sorts of things, but when I put out a gift for them, they reject it. I put up a little birdhouse that has suet on it, and in a bush, and it doesn't seem like anyone is interested in it. I put out sunflower seeds; nobody's eating it. So, what suggestions do you have?
Well, you know, feeders are the easy fix. That's the easy thing we can do. But the one thing I mention most on this show, and I've done so often, is a wildscape. And if that's a new term to you, it's easy to go back to your computer and look up Texas Parks and Wildlife wildscaping. There's other groups that do it. The National Wildlife Federation has a wildscaping page, and it's basically planting native plants for wildlife, and it's stuff you would do in your backyard for butterflies, birds, dragonflies, etc. So that's what I'd recommend. It's something that's not as easy as just putting up a feeder and filling it with seed. It's going to require a little homework, a little effort, and waiting a couple years. But we've done it in our yard, and it is worth the wait. So okay. I would look up Wildscape, do it, and then just wait a few years, and you will never regret it.
Okay.
Yeah. Where are you calling from, Cynthia?
DeRidder.
Okay. Great. Okay. Well, thanks for the call, Cynthia.
Thank you.
Great.
And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And we're going to go to our next two callers. Thomas from Longview, you're up next. Sherman from Shreveport, please hang on the line. Thomas, what's your question tonight?
Now, hold on. Thomas Longview just called a few minutes ago.
Yeah, this is a repeat caller.
Are you calling us back, Thomas? Because we're gonna charge you by the word, my friend.
Yeah, it's a repeat, but real quick.
Real quick. I heard you say that.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway, there is a owl call that is so eerie. And then I have some, land on Toledo Bend about Central Lake. Anyway, in the evening, around dusk or a little after, walking through the woods, and you'll hear the most eerie call. And I'm guessing it's an owl. And it's very loud, and it'll go, and I can't give you a great rendition. You're like, hoo, 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 ha, ha, ha,
yep.
And gaggle, gaggle, gaggle. And it's just scary. It's just,
yep.
It's just,
yep, Bill's going to cue that up. That's the barred owl. Here we go. Listen up, Thomas.
Hello.
And they start getting into what's called a... Let's hear if we hear it. Sounds like monkeys. Yep. Let's see if we've got it on this recording.
Well, we've got three of them here, so we'll go to each of them.
Yeah, try different. No, not that one. Not that one. Try the next one.
Well, those are both the same.
Okay.
But he gets into a little more cackle here.
No, not that one. We want the deep hoots. Try it. Here it is. Yep. So that's your
is
bird.
That bingo?
That's my bird.
Yeah, that's the barred owl, Thomas. It's spelled B-A-R-R-E-D. And so that's your bird. So, all right.
Man, what an eerie sound.
Yep.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Okay, thanks, Thomas.
And it's not like Shakespeare bard. It's B-A-R-R-E-D, which I've made that mistake. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now, and we've got time for maybe one or two more calls, and we're going to go next to Sherman from Shreveport. Sherman, what's your question tonight? Hello, Sherman?
Or maybe it's not
Hello.
Sherman.
Who is this?
Hello?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yes. This is Furman. And my question is, what are the name of those birds they winter on the campus of LSUS each year around this time? Seems like there are thousands of them. They come in around sunset.
Yep.
And I believe that they leave around sunrise.
Yeah, there's a big group of roosting robins and starlings. Those are the two dominants that I've seen on the campus there. Right off of Urey Drive, right in the main entrance, there's that big grove of oaks, and they're just a perfect place for big groups to get warm in and protective cover. So American robin and European starling are the two dominants. There might be some common grackles mixed in there too. That's great observation, Furman. Thank you for the call.
Right, thank you.
Okay.
And they are definitely roosting outside of my apartment as well, because I hear them every night. You can see them gathering up. You're listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And if you have any final questions, please give us a call. We have a few minutes left. In the meantime, you were talking about wildscaping earlier, and I just happened to think of, we were talking about fire ants as an invasive species, but really one of the most, critical invasive species in this continent has been the arrival of Europeans.
You're talking about who?
Yeah,
you
us.
And me?
Yes, because
Whoa.
We have come in and marched across the landscape.
Yes,
we
sir.
Have taken every sort of native grass and put it out of our minds so that we can have that nice, thin, mowable grass that
yep.
you can lay on with your kids and play on. But we have really, really upset the ecosystem because of our kind of, you know, attempt to manicure the culture around
That's
us.
Right. That's right. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Bill, so people can throw the rotten tomatoes at you and not at me, but you're absolutely right. We like to point fingers at other things like fire ants and giant salvinia, and guess what? Humans brought all those in. Yep.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And in the last few minutes here, we don't have any calls, but we're going to talk a little bit about bird watching at this time of year. Where would be the best places for bird watchers who really want to go out in the cold of winter and find those birds that they can see and kind of appreciate?
Anywhere that you've got a body of water, you're going to see the greatest diversity, because not just water birds, you're going to have edge birds, you're going to be probably near some forests, some trees, but the water provides a great diversity. Birds out in the middle of the lake, grebes and ducks, things on the edge like great blue heron, maybe killdeer running on the mud flats. So anywhere you have a big body of water. So here in Shreveport, go to the Red River National Wildlife Refuge. There's a big body water there, big grove of oak tree, or I'm sorry, pecans mostly out front. That's a fantastic place to go. In Lufkin, I really recommend the Ellen Trout Lake that we mentioned earlier. Any body water, if you can go to Lake Nacogdoches, find a public boat ramp to just scan the water. Sam Rayburn, so that would be my bet is for finding the greatest diversity of birds now is to find an edge of the water of the lake and scan out there.
Yep. All right. And let's close out this month's program with a conservation tip. What do you have for us this month?
Okay, instead of waiting for a wildlife problem to arise in order to connect with your local elected officials, why not proactively contact them to provide positive feedback in the name of wildlife conservation? Tell them that you appreciate all that goes with conserving wildlife, including clean air, clean water, green space, and public land where you and your family can enjoy the great outdoors. Regardless of your political affiliation, nature is something that all humans can embrace. Whether you like bird watching, fishing, hunting, hiking, or all the above, our elected officials need to hear positive comments from you asking that they continue to support these activities appreciated by their constituents. Wildlife conservation creates jobs and provides a tremendous economic impact to the U.S. For example, just look at the most recent federal report that states that wildlife watching alone is a $13.8 billion with a B dollar industry in the state of Texas, plus almost another $8 billion with a B from hunting and fishing combined in the Lone Star State. These numbers for Louisiana are high as well and important to any state's economy. Specifically, ask your elected official to support the bipartisan Recovering America's Wildlife Act, which would redirect $1.3 billion of existing revenues towards proactive, state-led wildlife conservation for species in need. Recovering America's Wildlife Act, also known as RAWA. To find your local elected official, do an internet search for quote, find your elected officials, end quote. And by entering your address plus your zip code, you'll be directed to their contact information. Then give them a quick call. Do it because the great outdoors needs your voice to be heard. Do it for the birds.
All right. Thank you very much, Cliff, for joining us again this week. You've been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. We'd like to thank everybody at the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for their help in this program, and I personally want to thank Cliff for joining us again tonight. This program is Bird Calls from Red River Radio, and our producers for tonight are Bill Beckett and Cliff Shackelford, with help from Wally Derleth, Tim Schnell, and Judy Cox. The audio for tonight's program will be posted on our website in the next few hours, and you can listen to the program again online at redriverradio.org. And remember, if you have a photo or a sound clip of a bird that you'd like Cliff to identify, you can send that to us at wbeckett@lsus.edu. And this is Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. We are KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, Magnolia, and KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up next.